I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there. Today is Friday. So next hour, as always, I've got a lot on Ukraine stuff, may bleed into the first hour to try to get through all of it in my report of False Flag Friday, and a report from somebody in Ukraine that kind of smells a rat on this stuff, too. It sure feels like they're setting us up to make this thing worse, and I also have a clip today that says maybe there's a ceasefire, so we're all left to wonder how this thing plays out. But we'll get to the war talk, the warmongers. Lindsey Graham, he's probably the most recurring character on False Flag Friday. A more despicable human being I cannot think of at the moment. And then we'll finish up with this week on the crazy train. Plenty of that stuff for that each and every week as we chronicle the descent into madness that is humanity. I want to remind everybody this weekend, we're going into the medical marijuana fight round, what is it, 6, 7, 8? The constant hurdles that have been before us, the legislature not acting for years and years, ballot initiative put together with its own set of dozens and dozens of hurdles during that campaign. Finally, the signatures gathered, put on the ballot, voted by 74% of the people, nullified by the one control freak that goes by the name of Mary Hawkins Butler, then affirmed by the Supreme Court, then no special session, and then finally we got a bill out of the legislature this year. Now the communities are opting out of this because they have become the hystericals, much like George Flags in Vicksburg was a COVID hysterical. The DA's offices and mayors and police chiefs and sheriffs have become the hystericals around medical marijuana. And so communities around the state are opting out. And so this is just another hurdle. I guess in recounting that, I think we're at about the 10th round of trying to beat back the authoritarians in Mississippi to allow people access to a very beneficial medicine. So in that light, this weekend, they will start collecting signatures to defeat the Gluckstadt opt-out. Meeting tomorrow morning, I believe, at 10:30 at Magnolia Hemp off of Highway 51 in Madison. Let me make sure I got the time right there. Yeah, they'll be meeting up around 10:30, and they'll have a tent set up there. So if you'd like to go by and sign the petition, if you're a Gluckstadt voter, Gluckstadt resident who voted, go by and sign the petition there at Magnolia Hemp, and they're also looking for volunteers to probably spread out across the city. And I think the number of signatures that need to be gathered in order to have a special election in Gluckstadt to vote on medical marijuana, for the people in Gluckstadt to vote on medical marijuana, is something only like 600 and something signatures. It's a very small hurdle. This should be a fairly easy thing, Gluckstadt being number one, Ridgeland and Brandon not far behind. But if you would like to fight back against these totalitarians and you're a Gluckstadt resident or know somebody in Gluckstadt, I know a lot of people listening are not necessarily from that small area just of Gluckstadt. But if you know anybody in Gluckstadt, please let them know. Tomorrow, Saturday, starting at 10:30 at Magnolia Hemp, there'll be a tent set up. People can go. And there's also, and I'm going to have to go check my notes back in the office, there was a website that people can go to sign up, to express interest, to possibly volunteer in collecting signatures. And that's a fun thing to do. It really is. You'll meet a lot of great people in these fights, but particularly if you're somebody out there that have loved ones who are fighting for their right to get this medicine because Big Pharma has failed you with your condition and you're looking for alternative natural treatments, then you really need to get involved in this. So you can go to this website and sign up and then make sure, even if you're not from Gluckstadt, but you want to volunteer to help collect signatures, you don't have to be from Gluckstadt to help collect signatures for these people. So try to sign up for any of these things that are available to you. So anyway, that's tomorrow, 10:30, Magnolia Hemp. Their address is 1716 Highway 51 North. They're in Suite D, but I believe they're going to have a tent set up outside. 1716 Highway 51 North. That's Magnolia Hemp. So as I said, it's round 10 in the fight to get Mississippi patients access to this plant medicine. The fight is not over. We're going to go all 12 rounds on this thing, I believe. Is that right? Professional boxing, is it 12 rounds? Have I got that right? I'm not a huge boxing fan, but anyway. All right, quotes of the day today. This one will become germane during the show today. This is from Harold J. Smith. He said, more people would learn from their mistakes if they weren't so busy denying them. And this is good on a personal level as well as a policy level, particularly when it comes to things like COVID, when it comes to things like pestering Russia enough to invade Ukraine. We just refuse to admit that we've done anything wrong, so we keep making the same mistakes over and over again. I would submit that that is the same for voting for either one of the big two parties. Steven Yatroska was on yesterday filling in for Jameson Haygood and talking about Delbert Hoseman holding redistricting over the heads of people who dared to challenge him. Politics is such a nasty business, and to think that somebody with an R behind their name is somehow going to deliver you freedom and prosperity just because they're great guys and really committed to responsible government is just laughable at this point. And it's interesting to listen, and what I've learned about Delbert Hoseman, what I've learned about the majority of Republicans in this majority red state, it's really interesting to know that, you know, within my friend group, within my little bubble here at the station, listeners to this station, we're all fed up with these people. I hear the term rhino constantly from my people, but we just underestimate this huge swath of Mississippians who consider themselves conservatives who will go and pull a lever for a Delbert Hoseman, a Tate Reeves, a Philip Gunn, without a second thought because they got an R behind their name and they just recognize the name. They met him at a Rotary Club meeting. They slapped him on the back. They took a selfie with him. And so now people think they're part of this great club. And we really underestimate the number of people who are that willingly complicit in the game of politics. I would have been guilty of it back when I was in my 20s. I would have swooned if Trent Lott had come by and shaken my hand. As a matter of fact, I did meet him. His daughter worked for me for a period of time. She was a great gal. But it's interesting to know that the politicians, you start to wonder why they think they can get away with what they get away with. And the reason they think they can get away with what they get away with is because they get away with what they get away with. Because the vast majority of people are not engaged in these issues. They don't really pay attention. And so it just continues to happen. This is a quote that's attributed to Clint Eastwood. I'm always a little suspicious of these things attributed to Clint Eastwood. There's so many bogus ones going around. People will just come up with some quote and they'll slap Clint Eastwood's name on it, Chuck Norris's name on it, any conservative celebrity, and pass it out. And many of these things have been debunked, but I'll just read this because I agree with the sentiment of it. Again, it's attributed to Clint Eastwood. If Congress really gave a rat's ass about the American people, they would resign. That's really all I need to see. I'm going to play a audio quote now from the President of the United States. And I got to tell you, this seems like... I can only imagine if Donald Trump had said this. This sounds like one of the most discriminatory, anti-Irish things I've ever heard in my entire life from Joe Biden. Listen to what he says about being Irish, but...
I may be Irish, but I'm not stupid. I married Dominic Giacoppa's daughter. I may be Irish, but I'm not stupid.
I may be Irish, but I'm not stupid. I don't know what how big the block is in this country of the Irish vote, but holy cow, I may be Irish, but I'm not stupid. That comes from the presupposition that all Irish people are stupid. What an idiot. And of course, we can all point to the fact that for Joe Biden to say he's not stupid is funny enough on its own. But I guess he's wearing his green tie. This must have been said yesterday on St. Patrick's Day. So Joe Biden's St. Patrick's Day message to all the Irish Americans out there is, I may be Irish too, but at least I'm not stupid. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And just even more stupidity, speaking of Irish, and this must have been yesterday too, of course, Jen Psaki, Biden's press secretary, always looks a little bit, well, she looks Irish and sometimes kind of leprechaunish. She's got the red hair, and in this particular clip, she's wearing a green something. Her shirt, pantsuit, whatever this thing is green. So I assume this is a St. Patrick's Day thing, too. But it does not reference the stupidity of the Irish that Joe Biden did. But this was Jen Psaki. I guess somebody was asking about how worried they are. This COVID stuff is, I know we feel like it's gone away because we're so focused on Ukraine now. I've got another clip in just a few minutes. It's not gone. They're giving us that breather, that time to take a little bit of the steam out of the kettle so we don't just all explode. With, of course, she was asked, I believe, about Joe Biden, how vulnerable he is because he's an older guy to COVID. And listen to what Jen Psaki says.
If a president, 79 years old, president of the United States, were to get COVID, might be more serious than somebody in their 20s.
Well, we don't know that. But we also know that COVID...
Wait, what? Joe Biden's in his 70s. We know he's more, the reporter rightfully says, strangely enough, we know that Joe Biden is more vulnerable to COVID than people in their 20s. And Jen Psaki says, we don't know that.
Somebody in their 20s.
Well, we don't know that. But we also know that COVID impacts people of all ages and a range of, but when we take what we do here, Jen, is not exactly as you said, so I wouldn't agree with your description there. I would say we do take extra precautions.
I'm going to play this one more time, and then I'm going to give you the statistics. Jen Psaki does not know if older people are more at risk from COVID than younger people.
79 years old, president of the United States, were to get COVID, might be more serious than, somebody in their 20s.
Well, we don't know that, but we also...
Okay, we don't know that. Here's some statistics. Of the under 18 age group that has been attributed to COVID deaths, and we know, with COVID, from COVID, we know that there are distinctions there that are not brought out. But attributed to COVID deaths, under 18 have been 921 people. Of the 65 plus, it's been 719,600. So young people, 921. Senior citizens, 719,600 people have supposedly succumbed to COVID. Jen Psaki says, well, we really don't know that the president is more susceptible to this disease than a 20-year-old. Also, with the statistic, the total population of the first group, which is people under 18, there are 73 million of them. The second group of senior citizens is only 54 million. So we've had 921,000 out of 73 million versus 716,600 out of 54 million. Jen Psaki still doesn't really quite figure out. She's not really not sure. They're still waiting on the data to come in. Well, there it is. Here.
I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I?
All right, I found that website. The website, if you would like to help defeat the opt-out bureaucrats with the medical marijuana thing, and, you know, even if maybe you don't support it or you're still on the fence, if you'd like to, what ultimately, if they get the signatures that they need to challenge the opt-out of Gluckstadt and Ridgeland and Brandon, it goes to a vote, and so the local residents can vote on it. This, to me, is really kind of the issue now when you realize that the political class is not really interested in serving their constituents. They don't really care what you think in a lot of cases. And this is why it's important to call people and let them know that, you know, maybe they won't get reelected. They do care about that when issues come up. So you can contact offices and they may switch a vote, not because of principle, but to save their own skin. But this gives an opportunity for the people of each area. And if the citizens of Gluckstadt vote down medical marijuana in their community, then at least I can respect that. A 3-2 vote at the Board of Aldermen denying every person in within Gluckstadt, everybody who wants to start a business in Gluckstadt based around a medical product, I have no respect for that. None. Now, I know we have representative government here. Each one of those aldermen were elected by the people, and so they speak on the people's behalf. Do you still believe that? Do you feel like once you've voted, you can just ignore everything because you know your representative will go up there and do the right thing to represent you? Is anybody still of that belief? Probably there are a lot of people. I talked about it just a little while ago. I need to keep reminding myself, this show doesn't reach everybody. WYAB doesn't reach everybody. There's whole swaths of people who are perfectly fine with Roger Wicker, Cindy Hyde-Smith, Michael Guest, Tate Reeves, Delbert Hoseman, and Philip Gunn. They're fine with them. They've got an R behind their name. They went. They did their duty. They voted. They got a sticker. They felt like a patriot that day. And then they just ignore everything until their next opportunity to vote somebody with an R behind their name. I think that's a failed strategy for decades and decades. So this is a chance to overrule or at least put a vote to the people of Gluckstadt, of Ridgeland, of Brandon, of any community that tries to opt out of medical marijuana. Let the citizens vote on it. So that website is Local Opt In, Local OPTIN, Local Opt In. And you can go there and sign up to volunteer to get signatures. Sign up if you're just interested in it. I would imagine they will give you updates on when they're going to be doing signature gathering efforts. These are not going to be going on for a long period of time. They're going to need people. While there's no time limit, I would hope they could get 600 registered voters of Gluckstadt fairly quickly. It's 600 and something, I believe, is the total they need to get. But when it comes to your community, they'll be doing signature gathering campaigns in every community that is opting out to put this to the people. Obviously, the people have got to start taking some level of control. And I love to see it. They're taking control of the school boards. They're taking control when it comes to medical marijuana. They're taking control of a whole lot of issues. And we need to, because the political class is not serving our interests. So go to localoptin.com. To help with the signature gathering effort in all of these towns that have opted out of medical marijuana. And tomorrow morning, 10:30 at Magnolia Hemp on Highway 51 in Gluckstadt, they'll have a tent set up. You can go by and sign your name. Let's get this petition done and put it to a vote of the Gluckstadt voter. All right. There are a couple other things. This was, I did a show earlier this week. I said, you know, with this Ukraine stuff overshadowing everything, because the media, once again, has stuck their first and middle finger up our nose and drug us to the next crisis, the next story. All focus must be on Ukraine. We do not need to let the people who perpetrated the COVID cult upon us, all with the rituals of the vaccine, we do not need to let them escape without judgment. And I think there's going to be plenty to be had. They're trying to disappear into the sidelines. Although, I will say, Anthony Fauci has made a surprise return to CNN. You know, he was pulled from the media after some polling showed. People didn't want to hear from the mini Mengele any longer. But he's back. And I think I smell something interesting in what he says. But this is Del Bigtree on his show, The High Wire. He is big on the vaccine safety issue. He's been hot on the heels of COVID. And he has a guy, an investigative journalist on, named Jeffrey Jackson, J-A-X-E-N, Jeffrey Jackson. And he has some interesting information to share.
there's some policy changes that parents should really know about as it pertains to their schools, their student athletes at school. And we're seeing this here. Let's look first at Orange County Public Schools. This is their sports physicals page. And the sports physicals must be completed each year. So this is what they're seeing now on these pages. And this is what they're seeing from their schools. New, this again, new in capital letters for the 2021-2022 school year, electrocardiogram ECG screenings are required for high school students wishing to participate in athletic programs. ECG screenings help identify athletes who are at risk of sudden cardiac arrest, which is the leading cause of death in athletes.
Oh, my God.
Now let's go.
I mean, like, what other, like, again, folks, do you ever remember how, I mean, I got my physical every year for all the sports that I played, and EKG, who ever heard that children have heart issues prior to this vaccination? I mean, the timing is outrageous. I mean, they're obviously not saying it there, right? They're not telling you why. We just suddenly feel it's really important for all of our students to get an EKG before you decide to run across a lawn, which could be detrimental to your health.
Right. And so there's more to this story here. So let's go to Virginia. This is allegedly Jackson River Pediatrics. And this was on Facebook. This was posted here. It says, student athletes, sports physicals are done primarily to make sure you are not at high risk for sudden cardiac death on playing fields. COVID vaccination affects your risks. Notice that's highlighted in yellow. In response to worldwide experience in vaccine adverse event monitoring, we are adopting a more precautionary sports physical sign-off policy. And this is also highlighted in yellow. If you have received doses of any COVID shot, we will not be able to clear you to compete in sports without performing lab work and possibly an echocardiogram to rule out potential heart damage.
That is outrageous. I mean, it's almost hard to believe somebody would post that. I mean, it's phenomenal. If we're reaching that place where at least they're admitting it, right? Orange County is not. Here they're saying, we know why we are going to check the heart on your athlete, and we're really going to be focused on those that received the vaccine. Welcome to the new normal.
That is just absolutely disgusting, our poor children. And the poor parents who are going to get this EKG or blood test, I guess it's a D-dimer test they may be doing on the kids to find out if there's any clotting. There's certainly been several news stories. I guess Justin Bieber's wife, Hailey Bieber. I wasn't familiar with this person. Am I getting old? I guess she's a model. And Justin Bieber's wife had a stroke. She had a clot into her brain. And she ended up passing that naturally. So she's all is well. But she just wanted to let everybody know that she had a brain clot. Suddenly she's 25. These things did happen to athletes. I had a friend in college. I think we were probably 20 years old, and he went out to play flag football one afternoon and never came home. A very tragic death, and he had a heart issue that was undiagnosed, and that was many, many, many years ago, long before any COVID vaccination. So it has happened before, but when they are starting to adopt EKGs now and starting to look and see if your vaccinated child has got heart damage, one of the things I suspect they're doing, because this feels like it's almost an admission. With that one doctor's office, they say having the COVID shots has increased your risk. It is a risk event for you to get this shot when it comes to your heart. And while it seems like it's an admission, it's probably a less nefarious admission than if we started to see a bunch of high school athletes dropping dead on fields. That would tend to get noticed by a lot more people. A parent taking a child in for a physical that gets an EKG, that's kind of a one-on-one thing. A stadium full of people who see an athlete keel over, or many athletes keel over, would be pretty bad optics and might actually wake people up to the dangers of these vaccines for our kids. We've been seeing this around the world when it came to professional athletics. I'm very aware, though, when it comes to these soccer players, particularly over in Europe, that have been collapsing on the field, not just Europe, all over the place, skiers here, athletes here have also had strange heart problems, but I don't have a context for how many times that happened in 2019. It feels like a lot now. I don't remember hearing these things very often, except for like Len Bias with the Celtics. What was it, back in the early 90s at some point? I believe that might have been drug related. I can't remember. I don't want to besmirch his name. But we hadn't heard about these things before, but now they seem to be happening. And shame on these doctors. I mean, can you imagine the heartbreak of a child? No pun intended, but pun arrived at. The heartbreak of a child who goes in as a star athlete, gets one of these tests, and finds out he cannot be cleared for sports anymore. No more sports for you. Your doctor told you to take this shot, that it's safe and effective, encouraged you to get it, got you to roll up your sleeves, convinced your parents there was absolutely no problems, and suddenly you head into your junior or senior year where you're going to be the star quarterback, and boom, you're out. No thank you. You can't play. And no more athletics for you for the rest of your life. Somebody who would have sailed through COVID as a young, healthy athlete would have had absolutely no problems, but the parents were so brainwashed and so convinced that this thing was just safe and effective because it's only two words to use, and now their child has been derailed. How many scholarship athletes are going to be lost around the country because they can no longer play athletics because they were inoculated with an experimental shot against a disease that would have maybe given them a runny nose? I mean, when you take a step back and look at this, the insanity over what we have done with these shots for young people is off the charts stupid. When I come back, Anthony Fauci, he's back in the media. I told you yesterday we're starting to see cases rise in Western Europe. This is always concerning because this has been the trend, right? It was Italy, England, and then the U.S. Well, first it was China, and a couple of weeks ago, China started locking down with a spike in cases. Now it's in Western Europe, and we can only anticipate that we're going to be next. Although, I kind of have a theory. We'll see if it proves out to be true. We'll play this clip from Fauci when we come back. Stay with us. Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know. All right, we are back. You're listening to The Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. We're getting to the season now. We had big rains last night, came through in the middle of the night. If you woke up this morning, found a bunch of standing water in your yard, it's going to be unusable for a few days. I don't know. I think we're expecting more rain, too. But this is, we're getting into the rainy season here. And if you've got a bunch of standing water that's around your foundations, underneath pavers, retaining walls, things like that, Magnolia Drainage Solutions has a product called HydroBlocks that you need to check out. It is easy and less expensive alternative to the old French drains. It never clogs. It moves water from where you don't want it to where you do want it. And so you can remove all of that standing water that you saw this morning when you woke up, and you're going to start seeing on a weekly basis now heading into the spring and summer. HydroBlocks does not require gravel, sand, or fittings. So if you want to take a look at this, you want to get it installed or order the system, you need to contact Magnolia Drainage Solutions, and you can find them online at magnoliadrainagesolutions.com. That's magnoliadrainagesolutions.com. Just go in there and check out their product. It's very interesting. There's always innovations. The old French drain, more expensive, it clogs up. You got to have a bunch of gravel in your yard. And we know, I used to do a landscaping service. I owned a janitorial company. We expanded into landscaping. And boy, there's nothing less fun than running into a bed of gravel when you've got the weed eater out. I got to tell you, that's not fun. I always wore shorts. I just like to be cool. I don't like to be sweating, but my shins would take a beating. So anyway, check them out, magnoliadrainagesolutions.com. All right. We may be on the cusp of a ceasefire agreement between Ukraine and Russia. Now, the headlines are all over the place. Talks have made progress, and then they say somebody comes out and denies that they've gotten anywhere. More on that next hour when I get into False Flag Friday. But here's the reason that I may suspect we're coming to a ceasefire. Imagine a ceasefire in the Ukraine situation right now. What would Americans possibly focus on? They're going to have to give us something, because if we're not faced with the existential threat of the Russian invasion of Ukraine freaking everybody out, then we might actually start talking again more about inflation. You know, some of the things that we can directly attribute to the regime in power right now and the regime of the Federal Reserve, people might start talking about. So they're going to have to keep the crises going. COVID has been off the table for the past few weeks to focus all entirely on Russia. But this clip with Anthony Fauci coming out with brand new fear mongering makes me think maybe there's a ceasefire there. So they've got to tee up COVID to distract us again when the Ukraine situation gets settled out.
In our health lead, just the tip of the iceberg. That's what the Director General of the World Health Organization.
Another iceberg, people, on the Titanic that is the United States.
Organization is calling the rise of new COVID infections around the world. In the U.S., the BA2 Omicron subvariant now accounts for nearly a quarter of all new cases.
Is it a coincidence? It just hit me, just as I heard him say that. You know, now I don't know why we've stopped with the Greek alphabet, and now we've gone to these variants, and they're the BA2. B-A. B-A, B-A, B-A. Just saying. Are they just flat out to our face calling us sheep? Is that why they're doing this?
Cases, putting as many as 28 million seniors at risk due to their vaccination status or the length of time since their last shot. Let's discuss all this with the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and the chief.
He's back.
Medical advisor to President Biden, Dr. Anthony Fauci. Dr. Fauci, good to see you again. So we're seeing these rising infections in countries in Europe and Asia where this BA2 subvariant has become the dominant strain. The latest estimates from the UK authorities say it's spreading 80% faster than the original strain. But we're also told that the BA2 subvariant is not more likely to lead to hospitalization, although, of course, there's growing concern about its impact on the healthcare system. How concerned should we be? Why is there concern about its impact on the healthcare system?
Now, what are the chances? How concerned should we be? How many times has that question been asked of these control freaks like Anthony Fauci or Thomas Dobbs? I wonder if he's going to say, oh, don't worry about it. Look, most everybody had this thing, particularly when the Omicron swept through. We've got herd immunity. Really, it's not going to be a problem. What are the chances Anthony Fauci says, oh, let's just keep going on with our lives, get rid of the masks. This thing has been around for a long time. Everybody's been exposed. It's no biggie. What are the chances he says that?
Well, first of all, what happens with us is that we generally follow what goes on in the UK by about 2 to 3 weeks. So we better pay close attention to what's going on there. They are correct. It has a transmission advantage over the original Omicron, which is called BA1. And what they're seeing is an uptick in cases that are related both to the increased transmissibility of the virus, the waning of immunity, but also the fact that they're opening up the way we are here and the way other countries in Europe and other parts of the world and pulling back on mask mandates and things like that. They're seeing an uptick in cases. I've spoken to them multiple times over the last week or so, and what they are seeing now is not an increase in severity of disease. For example, their ICU bed usage, their intensive care unit bed usage is not up. And the overall mortality, the overall all-cause mortality is actually down. So it's a very...
That's because fewer people are getting the shots these days.
Interesting situation where the cases are going up, but it does not at this point in time appear to be any degree of severity. So when you ask me, do we worry about it? Well, we certainly are concerned because I would not be surprised, Jake, if that in the next few weeks, given the fact that we've begun to open up, and we have an increase in the BA2 variant that we'll be seeing an increase in cases. Hopefully, that's not associated with an increase in hospitalization and severe disease.
Yeah, and as we've all learned, the most important indicators are hospitalization and mortality, death.
But that doesn't stop us from constantly reporting and having big banners on our network that show the case count. Cases are up by 20% in the state of Mississippi.
Because a case could be somebody who tests positive but is asymptomatic or has mild symptoms. The director general of the World Health Organization is sounding the alarm, though, saying that the pandemic's not over. Do you think it was too soon to move to the new metrics that allow so many Americans to not have to wear masks?
Jake, it's not too soon if you observe the caveat that's associated with that.
Let me guess. You got the shot?
And the caveat is we need to be flexible. And if, in fact, we do see a turnaround and a resurgence, we have to be able to pivot and go back to any degree of mitigation that is commensurate with what the situation is.
And there it is. We need to be ready to pivot right back in to all of the failed mitigation efforts of the first couple of rounds of the Omicron. The BA strain of the Omicron. They're not done with us, but what I'm just thinking is I'm trying to be hopeful. I try to see the silver lining around any dark clouds that may be coming. Maybe there's about to be peace between Russia and Ukraine, and they need to make sure that they can tee us up to something else to freak us out about so we don't actually pay attention to what's really going on. We'll see. Be right back.
Yeah. It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now, some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
We've been talking a lot on this show over the weeks about kind of the outspoken nature of Bill Maher resisting this new woke culture. I don't know if I played the interview he did with, what's his name, Ben Shapiro, where he explained that, you know, he didn't change. His ideas haven't changed. It's that the left has just lost their ever-loving mind. He talks about a lot of things, the bizarre positions on the left now that weren't even a thing 5 years ago. A three-year-old determining their own gender, that wasn't a thing 5 years ago. Defunding the police, that wasn't a thing 5 years ago. And so it's been interesting to watch Bill Maher, particularly with his left audience that has bought into a lot of that insanity. And I've been having a good time listening to them grapple with when to applaud during his show now. It used to be so easy because he would just say something disparaging about Trump and the crowd would go crazy. Now he says something disparaging about the woke culture and there's just a couple of people hesitantly clap and then maybe a few. They don't know what to do. They're forced with some level of independent thought and they just, it's like deer in the headlights. What do we do? Am I supposed to clap for that or not? Well, Bill said it. It must be, you know, they've got to go through their mind to try to figure out what their political position is, not just thinking about what he's saying. Anyway, it's been interesting to watch Bill Maher come around. I've got some clips for the next segment. There's a columnist I think she had written for. I think she's with Newsweek now. Her name, if I'm going to butcher it here, is Batya Unger Sargon. But I thought this was an interesting clip that didn't have so much to do with the war, which is what I'll have next time. But what happened to the media in this country? And I thought this was a very interesting take. She did this on the Bill Maher show.
What made it woke?
The abandonment of the working class. Journalism used to be a working class trade. It was a very low status job. Journalists lived in working class neighborhoods. They lived next door to factory workers and linemen.
Jimmy Breslin.
Exactly. Maybe a little bit more money than them. They saw themselves as outside of power, demanding justice on behalf of the little guy. Throughout the course of the 20th century, there was a status revolution among journalists to where journalism became basically an elite caste. It is now the provenance of basically people who are very, very, very highly educated, who come from rich parents, who come from money. Journalists, I mean, of course, there are exceptions. But
Some of them, like Anderson Cooper, come from the CIA. He comes from money. He comes from Anderson Cooper on CNN, comes from the Vanderbilt family through the CIA into the head position at CNN. So there's that, too.
By and large, the pathway to becoming a journalist now is through the elites, through elite universities. And that has, as journalists ascended to the ranks of the elites, they abandoned the working class that they used to belong to. And I argue that today they're using a moral panic about race to distract from the ways in which they have benefited from income inequality in America. So it's a distraction from the real divide, which is economic and about class, rather than political even. So I would even say the tribalism, it's not about politics, that's a mirage. The divide in America is about class.
I think that's very interesting. The fact that the media used to be working class people, and you know, if you had had a Trump figure, maybe in the 1970s, a populist kind of guy like that, that blue collar, you know, middle class, working class journalist might not have been so repulsed by someone who spoke to the working class, to the blue collars. But now we have this elite effete media from the coasts. And what's happened is, I mean, new people are coming into journalism all the time, and they might not all be from wealthy families, but they, in order to play the game, media is now run by these coastal elites. And so the blue-collar journalists, now you can't find them out there. They're on Substack. They're on blogs. They're on podcasts. There are investigative reporters out there that are doing, are still sympathetic to the plight, that understand that we've got a class warfare. And this is what I talk about on the show all the time. It's this 0.01% against 99.9% of us, but we are convinced it's 30% of the left versus 30% of the right, when all of you, 99.9% of you in either side, are really all in the same boat. This is about class. But I thought that was fairly interesting observation, is that that's why the media has changed so. They want to distract the American people from the fact that they are themselves the elites. The media was always designed to be a check on power, to be confrontational. That's why I don't have a problem with hard questions of Donald Trump. People would just clutch their pearls. The media is so mean to Trump. My problem wasn't that they're mean to Trump. It's that they weren't mean to Obama or Biden. The media should be an oppositional force. I wish they'd get back to that.
Yeah. What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Say it again, y'all.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. It's Friday, 10 o'clock on Friday. We really focus in on foreign policy issues, and they've become popular again, particularly when it comes to the Ukraine stuff. On the news break, they're reporting that President Biden was talking, had a phone conversation with Chairman Xi in China. I still, every time I hear of Joe Biden on a phone call with a foreign leader, I just imagine what happens after they hang up the phone with Joe Biden. They must just look around at each other. You know, all these guys are always surrounded by their advisors. They must all hang up, look at each other for a second, back and forth across the room, and then just bust out laughing that this is the guy. This is the guy in charge of the world's greatest military. This is the guy that's supposed to be setting the tone for the entire, air quotes here in the studio, free world. It must be really comical. At the same time, very concerning to know you're dealing with a dementia patient with the world's largest military, but it must be quite amazing. But what's interesting is that what Biden did, apparently, was called up and warned China that any involvement, any support for Russians would be met with grave consequences. So China cannot support one side of this conflict. They are not allowed to do financial or military support. That would be just a horrible, horrible thing to do. I mean, hypocrisy in this country has become a national pastime. At the political level, at the people level, both the right and the left have to twist themselves into hypocritical knots to justify what their guy does, that they would never like if some other guy did it, and our country doing something that we would hate it if another country did. So Biden threatens China with grave consequences should they contribute anything, financial or military capabilities, to the Russians. Well, that's interesting. Do we live by those kinds of words?
The White House is surely anticipating what is no doubt going to be this emotional plea from President Zelensky. And then later this morning, we're going to hear President Biden deliver these remarks, where I'm told he's expected to announce $800 million in new military aid to Ukraine. That includes those weapons that Rachel was just talking about, the ones Ukrainians have been asking for, like those anti-tank and anti-air systems, as the U.S. also now, as Rachel just said, considering sending armed drones as well. This is the part of that aid that the president signed as a bipartisan package yesterday.
Bipartisan. I always want to point that out. More on that in a second. Your Republican warmongers are out in force.
And take a look at what I'm told is the weapons that the United States has provided Ukraine in the past year.
Okay, everybody, it's Friday. I kind of like that I do this segment on Fridays. If you would, I'll give you a second. Pull out your paycheck. A lot of people get paid on a Friday. Pull out your paycheck. Take a look at your federal withholding. Here's where that money went.
600 Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, 2,600 Javelin anti-tank missiles, 200 grenade launchers and ammunition, 5 choppers, 3 boats, 70 other vehicles, and there has been $1 billion in aid just in the past week alone. Amy, we are also learning this morning that now President Biden is heading to Europe next week. He's going to attend a NATO summit in Brussels. The White House right now isn't saying at this point if he's planning to head to Poland to meet with refugees or whether he will meet with Vladimir Zelensky in person. They are still working out the details, but no doubt, Amy, the timing of this is expected to show a serious show of force and unity among these allies.
So there you go. We make the call to China. Don't you dare get involved in this conflict. Any kind of military or financial aid is off the table. This is, we just let these people sort out their own problems, right? No, wrong. We're behind this entire thing, certainly through the funding, certainly through the weaponry during the Obama administration. Trump, you know, this idea of letting Trump off the hook for this thing is just really aggravating to me. Again, hypocrisy has become a national pastime for people on the right and the left. Trump's the one that started providing the lethal aid, the javelins, to Ukraine. I heard a caller to one of the shows here on the station the other day say, and Trump paused this stuff. He stopped giving the Ukrainian military weapons. You're patently wrong on that. Actually, what Trump did is he made that call to Zelensky and said, hey, a lot of corruption there. I believe my opponent, Joe Biden, was involved in that corruption, which is fine with me trying to uncover the Biden's corruption. It should be public knowledge by now, and it should be signed off on by our corporate media. Of course, it wasn't. But it was only about an hour that Donald Trump held up weapons shipments to Ukraine. Donald Trump provided Ukraine with the javelins to murder ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine. Matter of fact, they were the first lethal weapons. Obama did the overthrow thing, and I guess he just thought the Russians would sit there and take it. He didn't send lethal weapons to Ukraine. Donald Trump did, because Donald Trump was the greatest weapons salesman that's ever existed for the United States. And he sent lethal aid to Ukraine that was used to murder ethnic Russians. Donald Trump is complicit in where we are now. I know that's not popular. It just happens to be the truth. So hypocrisy abounds. This is a guy. This is just some, he's an American that lives in Ukraine, got married apparently to a Ukrainian woman, and he's been putting out videos. Now, he says something here that I kind of share his belief, but I will just tell you, I don't know who this guy is. He just looks like a random dude. He's wearing an orange baseball cap and a gray T-shirt in this thing. Much like I know our media's lying to us, but I'm suspect of anybody. This guy could have been planted there by the Russians. So there's always that possibility. So I always am trying to find the truth, and I trust no one at this point. But he says something that is very interesting, and this is False Flag Friday, something that he's noticing in Ukraine and the news surrounding it.
I want to talk about what so many people on the internet are talking about, which is the stalled Russian invasion. I mean, I wish somebody would tell the Russians that they're stalled, because, see, I'm in Kharkov in the middle of this battle, and I can literally see the Russians getting closer every day. I can see them.
And I talked about this yesterday. There's two narratives that are going on right now that I find fascinating, that we can have both of these at the same time. One is we need to send planes and choppers and $14 billion to Ukraine to help them defend themselves, because if we don't, Russia is going to run the table of a bunch of NATO countries, and he's going to reconstitute the old Soviet Union. Vladimir Putin and Russia may take over the world if we don't stop him here in Ukraine. And then the other narrative that's going on at the same time is, oh, look at that. He can't even take over Ukraine. He's stalling. He's getting beat by a bunch of grandmothers with AK-47s. So I don't know how they push both of these things, but successfully they push both of these narratives.
I can hear the explosion of their artillery getting closer every day. I can see them winning. And I can see the video of so many other places that I know personally, like, for instance, the town of Chuguyev, which is just outside of Kharkov. I've been to that town many times, because in-laws live nearby. And I see that it's been captured by the Russians. And it's indisputably that town. and they're indisputably Russians, okay, they're winning. And the different places that I see that appear on video of Russian tanks and Russian soldiers walking around, and I know that they're winning. And so I'm trying to understand, what is this crazy talk about the Russians having been stalled? They're not stalled. There's just not anything left to take over. There's no other ground left to win. All that they're doing right now is slowly, inexorably squeezing the different parts of the Ukrainian armed forces that they have captured. They are squeezing Mariupol. They're squeezing Kharkov. They are squeezing Kiev. And just like a snake squeezing a rodent. And so I have to ask myself, why are they saying this, that the Russian invasion has stalled? And everybody's saying this. And there's only one explanation as far as I'm concerned. They are laying the groundwork to carry out a false flag and blame it on the Russians. Because they keep insisting that the Russians' invasion has stalled, and that they, therefore, you know, this makes it tempting for the Russians to use biological, chemical, or even nuclear weapons to change the balance of the battle. This is absurd. This is completely absurd.
And I got to tell you, that is the rat that I smell as well. They're trying to make you think that the Russians are desperate. Now, the maps that I've seen, and again, I've asked if anybody knows a good source of information of what's going on in Ukraine, I would certainly like to know it. I can find ones that bolster my belief or my thinking on this, but that's not what I want. I want to actually know what's going on. I want to know if Vladimir Putin is committing war crimes or if he is trying to do his best to minimize civilian casualties and just denazify and demilitarize Ukraine right on his border. I can find people to tell me that. I can also find people to tell me that he is a brutal dictator and he's plowing through there and has designs on many Western European countries, or excuse me, Eastern European countries. So I would really like some good information on it. But that's exactly what it feels like to me. They're trying to tell you that Russia is desperate. So when this chemical attack goes on, it will be, see, they were losing and they resorted to these kinds of tactics to change the balance of the war. Here's one of your Republicans out there. The Republicans are as disgusting as any leftist crying about anything here in the United States is. When it comes to war, the Republican Party has no peer in their warmongeriness. This is Senator John Thune, a Republican.
U.S. Senator John Thune says the Biden administration should support a transfer of MiG-29 fighter jets from Poland to Ukraine.
It is the one thing President Zelensky has repeatedly asked us to do. Many of us that are at a loss as to why the administration isn't taking that step. I know they're worried about escalation, but at this point, any weapon system that we can provide for Ukraine that enables them to deflect the Russian attacks is something we need to do.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, I bet John Thune probably has some donors that have such weapons. I would imagine some of his corporate benefactors, some of his donor class level people probably manufacture some kinds of weapons that could go over to Ukraine. Just a guess.
The administration is facing backlash about its refusal to approve the transfer, citing concerns Russia would see the move as a provocation. The U.S. is sending other weapons systems into the war zone. President Joe Biden announced almost $1 billion in new military assistance today in response to Zelensky's speech.
Yeah, there you go. That's not a bad gig. Zelensky got on a Zoom call and picked up $1 billion for it. Not bad. And it's all your Congress critters on both sides of the aisle doing that, save just a few principled people. And I guess I'll go ahead and play this. On the world stage, we are represented by a cavalcade of psychopaths. All the way from the dementia patient Joe Biden on a phone with Xi threatening him for doing exactly what we're doing. And then there is, it gets even worse. Lindsey Graham put out a tweet for the assassination of Vladimir Putin. He has now tripled down on this. He's asked about it at a press conference, I think, yesterday.
Do you still stand by your call to have Putin be assassinated?
Hmm?
Do you still stand by your
call? Yeah, I hope he'll be taken out.
one way or the other. I don't care how they take him out.
Now, you're listening to a psychopath. I just, you know, maybe if you pay close attention, maybe we can find triggers so we can identify these people in our own lives or when we meet people to identify a psychopath. You're listening to a psychopath who probably campaigns as a conservative Christian in the state of South Carolina. But he's a psychopath. He's a mentally deranged, satanic force on planet Earth.
I don't care if we send him to The Hague and try him. I just want him to go. Yes, I'm on record. Please understand, Senator Lindsey Graham, if John McCain were here, he'd be saying the same thing, I think. It's time for him to go. He's a war criminal. I wish somebody...
Vladimir Putin is a war criminal for doing exactly the same thing that Lindsey Graham has been doing for decades now. Invading other countries, bombing their towns, sending people fleeing for their lives. This is what Lindsey Graham's resume is sending troops to invade other countries.
He had taken Hitler out in the 30s. So yes, that Vladimir Putin is not a legitimate leader. He is a war criminal. He needs to be dealt with by the Russian people. I'm not asking to invade Russia to take him out. I'm not asking to send American ground forces in Ukraine to fight the Russian army. I am asking the Russian people to rise up and end this reign of terror.
I am asking the South Carolinians, the people of the United States, to rise up and take care of this cancer on our political system. Lindsey Graham.
For you and the world at large. That if you follow Putin, you're going to have zero future. I encourage what Zelensky said, that every American company leave Russia right now. Leave today. I encourage the world to strangle the Russian economy.
That is a psychopath. He wants to strangle the Russian economy. Do you think that's going to hurt Vladimir Putin? The guy's rumored to be worth billions of dollars. His lifestyle will never change, just the same way sanctions on North Korea do nothing but hurt the North Korean people. Lindsey Graham wants to see the average Russian, who has no power in their country whatsoever. They're not behind this invasion. They have really basically nothing to do with it. He wants them to feel the maximum amount of pain. Lindsey Graham wants to, in his words, strangle the Russian economy.
Our war is not with the Russian people.
But we'll strangle you anyway.
In many ways, they're as much of a victim as Putin as anybody else. The young journalist yesterday who held up the sign, now that takes guts. People like that change history. So how do I think this ends? I think if we stick with it, that if we help the Ukrainians fight for their own freedom, provide them reasonable assistance on the military front to regain control of their skies, help them with food and clothing and economic assistance, and strangle the Russian economy, that there will be forces emerge inside of Russia to end this.
And that has never been a successful strategy up to and including today. How many countries have we isolated? We've tried to starve the people. We believe if we can just starve the Iranians enough, they'll take out their government. If we can starve the Cubans and make them hungry enough, they'll take out their leaders. If we can really starve those North Koreans, that'll give them the energy to overthrow their government. That has never worked. Lindsey Graham wants to starve out hundreds of millions of people in Ukraine. I mean, in Russia. Boy, I could get a knock at the door from the Secret Service if I said exactly what I want to say about Lindsey Graham. And I'm going to point this out one more time. This is that Sargon on Bill Maher again. She's with Newsweek. She's the one that talked about the wokeness of the media these days. She reports on what's going on over there and how easy this conflict is to end.
I believe that if you're not going to absolutely crush your enemy, you have to give them a way out. And the thing is, we're not going to crush Russia. We are not going to crush Putin. We should not be invading. We should not be giving a no-fly zone. Now, here's the interesting thing that people who are disconnected from the news, as well as people who are connected from the news, don't know, which is that on Monday, Putin laid out three conditions for immediately stopping the campaign in Ukraine, the invasion of Ukraine, that war there. The three conditions were that Ukraine give up trying to become part of NATO, that the Crimea be declared part of Russia and that the Donbas region be recognized as independent. In other words, Putin said, if you recognize the actual status quo, I'm willing to stop this immediately. Then later that night, Zelensky gave an interview to ABC News where he said, on NATO, he is willing to give up his claim to NATO, his request to join NATO. On the Donbas and on Crimea, he said those requests, he's not going to accept them as ultimatums, but he is willing to negotiate on them.
This is always funny to me when it comes to foreign policy. You'll hear this a lot. A country will ask something. You know, can you not surround our country with bases? Please stop putting your bases here. Please stop doing war games on our border. They'll ask and ask and ask and ask and ask for decades and decades. And then when they finally have had enough and they take some military action, but they remain with the same request that they've had for decades that were just ignored or ridiculed or just tossed aside. They make the same request that they've had for years and years. And the United States foreign policy establishment and as well a lot of conservatives out there say things like, well, we can't give in to threats. We're not going to do it now because they're threatening us to do it. Well, they ask you nicely for a little while. They ask with a lot of real importance for a period of time after that. They acted, they told you what they were going to do if you didn't honor their requests. And now you don't honor the requests because you think it's a threat. Oh, we're not going to do it. You know, we don't yield to terrorists. It's really quite amazing. This whole thing actually could have been avoided had Zelensky just signed off on these things. If Zelensky had basically said, we're not going to join NATO and we're going to stop slaughtering people in our own country. I'll stop slaughtering Ukrainians of ethnic descent. This thing doesn't even happen. Never even happens, much less stop after some damage has been done to his country. He could have stopped it. I have, interesting, I was looking at my podcast the other day. I've got a couple of downloads from Ukraine in the past few days. If there's anybody from Ukraine that is listening to this, I don't know how it would have gotten there, and it may be just a bot that it just popped up, but I thought it was interesting. Your president is sacrificing you. Your president knows he could have avoided this whole thing had he just not been a puppet of the West. If he had just said, no, we're not going to join NATO, we'll play nice with Russia, and we'll stop slaughtering your people and building dams to cut off water to the people of Crimea. We'll just stop assaulting ethnic Russians in our country. Then this whole thing doesn't happen. Zelensky knows it. Biden knows it. Lindsey Graham knows it. They all know that this is something that was easily solved with very reasonable demands by Russia, and they refused to do them.
In other words, the two sides of this conflict on Monday of this week said that there is room to negotiate and agreed on much of the territory. You did not hear about that in any of the mainstream media except for a tiny bit here, a tiny bit there. Why aren't the headlines saying the two sides are willing to accept some of the same conditions? They're moving towards each other. You only read about that in the Israeli news. Why is that? Why aren't we helping them to end this? Why are we escalating in our media?
Because our media sucks and they're handmaids to the Wall Street warmongers. I'll be right back. All right. And the kicker of the U.S. involvement in Ukraine that kicked this whole thing off. This shouldn't surprise anybody. But to anybody who stands with the largely white nationalist government of Ukraine because you believe they were just an innocent country, just sitting there minding their own business, and the United States we just want peace and prosperity for all. CIA paramilitaries have been training Ukraine forces on the front lines of the Donbass war against Russian-backed separatists since 2014 and were only pulled out by the Biden administration last month. This was in a story of Yahoo News reporting Wednesday, citing former U.S. officials. The CIA first sent a small number of paramilitaries to eastern Ukraine when the war started in 2014. And this is the war that was kicked off by our own State Department when we overthrew the government in Ukraine and suddenly installed some neo-Nazis that wanted to ethnically cleanse eastern Ukraine. When you threaten to kill a bunch of innocent Ukrainians of Russian descent, they don't like that. And they will fight to not be slaughtered in mass. And so this started the war. Again, this was started by the United States by overthrowing the government of Ukraine. So the CIA goes ahead and sends some people in to train the Ukrainians on how to murder Russians in eastern Ukraine. CIA first sent a small number of paramilitaries to eastern Ukraine when the war started in 2014, which was sparked by a U.S.-backed coup in Kiev and the Donbass separatists declaring independence from the post-coup government. Now, it gets a little bit better here. As part of the training, CIA paramilitaries taught Ukrainian forces sniper techniques, you know, to kill ethnic Russians, Ukrainians, how to operate U.S.-provided Javelin anti-tank missiles, thank you to the U.S. taxpayer, and how to avoid being tracked on the battlefield by using covert communications and other means. The former official said the first CIA was surprised at the capability of Russia and the separatists compared with U.S. adversaries in the Middle East. And here's the payoff here. The U.S. military held similar training programs for Ukrainian forces in western Ukraine. This is all taxpayer funded, you understand. You paid to kick off this war. U.S. military held similar training programs for Ukrainian forces in western Ukraine that have been publicly acknowledged. In January, Yahoo News revealed that the CIA had also been holding U.S.-backed training program for Ukrainian forces. A former CIA official said that the U.S.-backed, U.S.-based program was training, quote, an insurgency, unquote, and taught Ukrainians how to, quote, kill Russians, unquote. And I'm going to mention this, too, because it needs to be said. This show is about just saying it like it is. I don't play the two-party game. I don't like any of our political class. This stopped a couple of months ago, where I guess they felt that they had sufficiently baited the Russians and they were actually coming in. So the CIA bugs out right before the Russians get there. How about that? Now, I'm not saying there's not some advisors still there. But this particular program, basically, they went in there, they provoked Russia, taught Ukrainian neo-Nazis how to murder Russians very effectively with U.S. taxpayer-funded weapons. And then when the Russians acted, the CIA went, all right, remember what we told you. See you later. Good luck with that. We bugged out. But that also means they were there since 2014. Does anybody know where I'm going with this? That means they were there in 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, and 2020. What do those years matter? This was during the Trump administration, who had the CIA in Ukraine teaching Ukrainian white nationalist brigades of their army how to murder Russians. So this whole idea that this never would have happened under Trump's watch, Trump was a huge part of what's taking place right now. This is another CIA-created war, and the CIA was training white supremacists, white nationalists, neo-Nazis on how to murder ethnic Russians. And we just can't figure out why Vladimir Putin is doing what he's done. Unbelievable. Be right back. What's your frequency? Can it be shot? Been so drained. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Boy, I'm going to have to scurry through this segment. We do this every Friday as we chronicle the world's descent into madness with This Week on the Crazy Train. All aboard! Yeah, I am really going to have to try to figure out. There is plenty to go around, and many of it is Ukraine and that war related. So let me get into some of the clips I've got when it comes to this. Some people, the hypocrisy, again, is amazing. And we love to go around and threaten everybody if they don't go along with our program.
There's been a report yesterday about the possibility that India could take up the Russian offer of discounted crude oil. What would be your message to India or any other country tempted by such an offer?
Well, our message to any country continues to be that obviously abide by the sanctions, but that we have put in place and recommended. I don't believe this would be violating that, but also think about where you want to stand when the history books are written in this moment in time. And support for the Russian leadership is support for an invasion that obviously is having a devastating impact.
Yeah. So there you go. So it was India is talking about getting oil from Russia. Russia's offering deals on oil. Think about that while you're paying $4 a gallon. The White House is concerned with the American people being well informed on what's actually going on, the facts. And so they held a meeting. I can't remember the number of these things, but they've decided to make sure that they use TikTok, the Chinese product, for American propaganda.
Why is gas so expensive, and why is the United States inflation rate at a four-time decade high? I had the opportunity to ask the White House why gas down the street is $7, and here's what they said. The obvious reason: we are getting out of a two-year pandemic. When use goes up, price goes up. But the call was predominantly about Ukraine and Russia, so how does that relate? Russia is one of the top three producers of oil, and it is actually their number one revenue source. Now, with Putin starting this horrific fight between Ukraine and Russia, nobody wants to work with him and do an international trade. So, with people being scared of war and limited resources, prices are bound to go up as well. For the people who can't pay $7 for a gallon of gas, there's an app called Gas Buddy that shows you the cheapest gas near you, as well as a link in my bio to donate to the misplaced refugees of Ukraine.
So, the TikTokers have taken their marching orders from the White House to misinform everybody who is a TikTok fan. I was about to implicate kids, but I get a lot of TikTok clips sent to me from grown people as well. So anyway, they've unleashed the TikTok army of propagandists. I love that. Where it's like, if you can't afford $7 oil, you can go to a website and they'll tell you where the cheapest oil is. Oh, and send me money to send to the Ukrainian refugees. I guess I shouldn't knock that. One thing, this was certainly expected, and I would imagine we'll see this persist for a while.
Police across the country are reporting more gas thefts. Police near Houston say thieves pulled up in trucks, some containing large storage tanks, and stole about $8,000 in gas after somehow unlocking the tanks. And just days earlier, a different gas station in Houston had 1,000 gallons of diesel stolen from an underground tank by thieves in a van equipped with a pump and a trap door.
So we know we're going to see a lot of these stories going forward. You know, the funny thing was, what, just 8 months ago or so, the memes were going around. You'd see, they'd show a picture of a pickup truck with a bunch of sheets of plywood in the back, and the meme would say, "Yeah, we get it. You're rich." And now what that is, I would imagine people, maybe their status symbol on social media is they're showing their tank on full. I'm a baller. I'm a player. Look at that. I got a full tank of gasoline. This may be the new thing. I don't remember exactly what this clip was. We'll just play it.
And by the way, you better not complain about this. Good Americans love higher gas prices.
Oh, yeah.
They love suffering for a cause they don't understand. CNN looked into it, and that's what they found. Watch.
People we've spoken to over the last couple weeks, they're okay paying higher prices if it means holding Russia accountable for what they are doing in Ukraine. But these prices are likely going to creep higher.
Turns out, Americans are delighted to be poor and helpless. They love it because poverty means holding Russia accountable. Not Putin's poverty. That's not going to happen. Your poverty. Well, how exactly does your poverty hold Putin accountable? CNN didn't ask that question. But the polling company Rasmussen did ask. That's what they do. They asked this question, quote, if a wider war breaks out in Europe, should the U.S. military be involved? Pretty simple question. The answer was not simple, though. The answer varied by income. This may not surprise you. The people who actually fight our wars, the people making under 30 grand a year, were overwhelmingly opposed to this war. Only 37% of them supported military action. And then it changed going up. The richer and more cut off from physical reality people got, the more ardently they supported war with Russia. And it turns out that's the subset you see. Those are the people on television, the people with fake jobs and inherited money. They're totally for it.
Yeah, that's because the elites don't fight the wars that they prompt. It's the poor schlubs out there that go fight the wars and pay the cost for the wars. And for some reason, we keep going along with it. Now, of course, that was Tucker Carlson, the Russian asset The ladies on The View, they think it's time to take action against people like him.
And look, I think that's an incredibly relevant question. Yeah. And I think DOJ, in the same way that it is setting up a task force to investigate oligarchs, should look into people who are Russian propagandists and shilling for Putin. That's being, if you are a foreign asset to a dictator, mm-hmm. it should be investigated. In fact, I remember when Tulsi Gabbard, mm-hmm. and I even hate that we're discussing it because I think to myself, who is this woman? She's a, you know, she's no longer in Congress. She's a failed presidential candidate. She only practically exists on Twitter, and the fact that we're giving her oxygen is what makes her relevant, that we're talking about her on Hot Topics. But on the other hand, how do you not call out something that is repeating mm-hmm. false Russian propaganda and that has been brought down?
They used to arrest people for doing stuff like this. If they thought you were colluding with a Russian agent, if they thought you were putting out information or taking information and handing over to Russia, they used to actually investigate stuff like this. And I guess now, you know, there seems to be no bars. And people are not being told to hate Putin. Putin doesn't need a reason to be hated. It's pretty much clear.
He started a war.
He started an unnecessary war that nobody wants.
So Whoopi Goldberg, and I think it's Anna Navarro, is that what her name is? They want to see Tucker and Tulsi Gabbard investigated and locked up and prosecuted for treason. The ladies on The View have spoken. I'll be right back.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for the week, and I always end with my best piece of advice for you to enjoy your weekend. Go out, spend time with loved ones, with friends, with family, and if you do that, you're going to want to take everybody out to Your Pie out in Gluckstadt. They are at 340 Calhoun Station Parkway, right there across the street from Germantown High School. 10-inch brick oven-fired pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, gelato, brownies. They got beer and wine as well. This is a locally owned, veteran-owned business that's been out there serving the Gluckstadt community. And we get a lot of people come in there that say, "Well, I came up here. I'm so glad I was up this way. I live out in Star, Mississippi, but every time I'm up here, I make sure I stop by Your Pie." The food's fantastic. Make sure you download their app, and you will get special bonus points and things for free goodies. Once you eat there once, you will eat there many, many times. They've also rolled out, you can order online, a 14-inch pizza. This is new for the place, so you can check that out through the app or through online ordering and get that. Can't order it in the restaurant right now, but you can order it online. So that is Your Pie, 340 Calhoun Station Parkway, where you can express your inner pizza. All right, let's finish up here. I thought this was interesting. This is just a matter of time. Apparently, this wasn't a great one, but there is a technology that is emerging that is going to have some strange uses, things we should be on guard for going forward when it comes to war.
A Ukrainian media outlet appeared to be hacked this week. The culprits used their access to the website and broadcast to post a fake video of Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky surrendering to Russia. President Zelensky quickly posted a real video debunking its claims. Plus, the faked
video... I mean, how long is it till we start seeing really good, convincing, deep fake videos, and then the actual person has to go out, "That's not me, that's not me!"
The video itself wasn't very believable, thanks to his stilted, robotic voice and a disconnect between Zelensky's head and body. However, national security officials have been warning for years about the dangers of these so-called deepfakes. Real videos or images digitally altered to make people appear to be saying or doing something they never did. The technology is improving, but quick fact-checking can help inoculate the public against disinformation.
Oh, yeah. And the fact-checkers are disinformation themselves. If the technology existed for deepfakes, they would already be using it in place of any public appearance by Joe Biden. A lot of these hoity-toity Democrats, if you notice, they're all getting the coof. You know, Barack Obama has had it, and Kamala Harris's husband got COVID as well, and Biden was asked about that. I'm not sure how many stabs he takes at having to give Kamala Harris's husband a title, but I think he misses it three times. It may be three strikes, you're out.
Stage, but that's enough too. Look at the stage. But there's been a little change in the arrangement of who's on the stage because of the First Lady's husband contracting COVID. But look at this room. And
he called her the first, called Kamala Harris the First Lady.
What you see. Pardon? That's right. She's fine. It's me. That's not together. The second lady, the first gentleman. How about that? Anyway.
So he calls her the, calls Kamala the first lady, calls him the first husband. That would make him Joe Biden's partner. Anyway, yeah, deepfakes might have saved the Joe Biden presidency if they could have just made him act out something. Let's see what else we got here. So we got time for this one. This was ironic, and it's actually a little old. I didn't have time for it last week. Justin Trudeau on the state of democracy and authoritarianism around the world.
And we've come to a moment that, quite frankly, we've seen coming over the past years. And we've talked about it in the news, not just about Ukraine, but about democracies around the world, that we see a bit of a slippage in our democracies. Countries turning towards slightly more authoritarian leaders.
Yeah, like you.
Countries allowing increasing misinformation and disinformation to be shared on social media, turning people against the values and the principles of democracies that are so strong. And that slippage over the years unfortunately emboldened Putin and made him think that he could get away with this, that he could get away with it in Ukraine.
Yeah, the way that you got away with it in Canada, being the authoritarian that you were. We live in truly bizarre times. That's all the time I got today. Go out, have a great weekend. I'll see you on Monday.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.